From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Darryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This from Boston. Suvan?
Darryl, hi.
Hey, so do me a favor. Think back to when you were growing up. What do you think of when you think of the first day of school?
Oh man, so many things. I think top of mind would be, man, what am I going to wear?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, for an adolescent girl, one of the things that I thought about. Other things I thought about were, you know, butterflies in my stomach, a little bit of anticipation, a little bit of nerves. Also, who's going to be in my classes? Who are my teachers going to be? I remember one year in high school, my first period was gym class.
Oh, wow.
You don't want that.
No, you don't.
No way. So that kind of sucked. But in general, a mix of excitement and nerves. Yeah.
Yep. All of that makes total sense. What am I going to wear? I got to be fresh the first day. You know, am I going to be in class with any of the homies? You know, absolutely. The first day, that makes so much sense. So I'm here with Suvan Lee, WBUR's Assistant Managing Editor of Education. Suvan, we asked you to come by because the school year has begun for Boston Public School students and things are looking a little shaky. The Orange Line shutdown has added difficulty to some school trips. Students and teachers are still trying to cover ground loss after 2 years of disruptions to learning due to the pandemic. And attendance is still an issue for the district. You know, with all that in mind, can you give us a sense of what the first day of school was like for the district?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so as you said, Thursday, September 8th, was the first day back for BPS students. And there was a lot of anticipation for this day because, as you mentioned, transportation was just front and center. The Orange Line being shut down for repairs as it is until September 19th. This is overlapping with the BPS first day. So a lot of people were nervous, understandably so, for how many kids would get to school. Now, the education team's reporters, in addition to reporting fellow Vanessa Ocha-Villio and Carrie Young and Max Larkin, our two education team reporters, were out in various areas of the city to kind of monitor the situation. Carrie was at the Forest Hills T stop, which is one of those Orange Line stops. Max was in Dorchester and Vanessa was in Chinatown. And so they were really kind of gauging how the transportation issue was rolling out for the first day. All in all, it seemed like the Orange Line stops were coordinating shuttle buses and using so-called school ambassadors to sort of guide students onto these shuttle buses and help them on and tell them where to go. Now, the situation for some parents out in Dorchester, on the other hand, was a little bit trickier. Max spoke with one such mom, Joanne Matthews, who talked about a 15-minute delay for her child's bus and not knowing when it was going to arrive. Some, in fact, just abandoned their stops altogether and decided to head to school just by walking or finding an alternate means.
We're used to it from last year, so it always, if it says it comes at 7:57, it comes like at 8:15. So it will get here. It should get here, you know.
And then over in Chinatown, parent Tasha Flores said she got a call literally around 7 in the morning that the school bus driver for her children's school wasn't available to drive them.
I found out literally this morning like around 7 a.m. School was set to start at 9:15 a.m. Lucky I live pretty close, but I had to rearrange some of my morning routine to make sure I get them to school on time.
All right, so Suvan, you know, I'm hearing these parents kind of grappling with, you know, how to get their kids to school, but this is only going to be for the next maybe a week and a half. How are they thinking about transportation for the future, you know, seeing that, you know, there may be some possible future shutdowns?
And I think that may be the million-dollar question. What happens with a future shutdown on the T? Because the Boston Public Schools transportation just delivery system is so integrated with public transit, mm-hmm. I think that's a very open question. But more so, the school buses that BPS contracts with, the yellow school buses that we see right on the roads, that also has been just beset with a lot of delays over the years. In fact, at the conclusion of the school first day of school Thursday, BPS officials told our education team that the on-time arrival rate for these school buses was only about 50%. So that means half of kids relying on the school bus weren't able to get to the opening bell in time. Now, the first days of the school year is when we typically see these delays occur. So it should be a lot better in the following days, but that's yet to be seen. And let's not forget that the BPS is under a school improvement plan at the moment with state education officials, in which they've committed to ensuring a 99% on-time arrival rate this school year. So that's a very ambitious task, knowing what we know so far about their progress to date.
Got it. And so that kind of touches on a question I have about attendance. The Boston Public School District has been struggling with attendance even before the pandemic, and the pandemic seemed to have exacerbated those struggles. Can you talk about how the district is looking to handle that this school year?
Absolutely. BPS's chronic absenteeism rate was higher than the state average over the last few years. And so officials are really keen on how to re-engage these students. In fact, just the other day, I went down to observe how what they call a re-engagement effort was rolling out on the before the first day of school. And so on Wednesday, they were going door-to-door knocking on some of these students' homes who had been what we know as chronically absent or who dropped out of school last school year. School leaders want to know, where do they go and how can we reintegrate you into the school system? So when I was talking to these folks, they were saying how the issue isn't going to be so black and white. I mean, it's not just a matter of they don't feel like coming to school. They could be taking care of a sick parent. They could be helping out with younger siblings in terms of caretaking, or they could be working jobs. We just don't know until we have those conversations. But as far as how attendance will look this coming school year, we really can't say for sure yet. The pandemic took a toll on many families and households, and many students simply stopped coming to school. And this is happening not just here, but nationwide.
Right. And, you know, just COVID in general was very disruptive for students. Even if you were trying to make it to class, you know, you had to learn, you know, through the screen, and or you had to deal with some of those challenges of maybe balancing school and some new responsibilities because of COVID, et cetera. How are schools planning to cover the lost ground in education due to COVID?
Sure. As you mentioned, virtual learning, it's harder to sort of reach kids, especially the younger ones, with some of those basic fundamental learning building blocks. And so I think the big challenge ahead will be, how are we going to catch them up, so to speak? What our reporters, in their conversations with school leaders, have found or learned is that some of these strategies include just putting more supports in the classrooms, whether it's from tutoring or whether it's just being very mindful and intentional about picking the pace up a little bit to sort of make the instruction a little bit more focused on some of those lost skills. Mm-hmm. And I think another big part of this is helping kids be aware that adults care about their livelihoods and that it's not just a place of instruction.
Right.
So, for instance, Carrie Young, one of our reporters, went out to East Middle School in Brockton, which is a school district about 45 minutes outside of Boston, to talk to the principal there. And what the principal there was telling her was that she wants to start with building these relationships back up. So as kids are back in school in person for the start of the new school year, she wants to make sure that she's going classroom to classroom and showing that they know she's there and visible and keeping tabs on how they're doing. So I think this will be playing out from school to school around here as far as working to establish those bonds and that trust and that loyalty from adult to child or teacher to student, school leader to student, to show them that they're there, they're caring, they're listening, and that will hopefully motivate students to really engage better in the classroom.
And also in the midst of all this, you know, of course, things seem to be a little bit more settled as it relates to COVID. Not settled, but it seems a little bit more under control, you know, and with that, you know, masks are optional in schools now. But we're heading into these colder months where there tends to be an uptick in cases, you know, around this time of year. How are schools preparing themselves for the potential of another COVID surge?
Yes, this is the first year in which most, if not all, school districts in Mass do not have a statewide masking requirement. So there's a sense of relief, I think, that's palpable among school leaders that they don't have to really worry about such enforcements or be preoccupied with all these COVID safety protocols, and they can just focus on sort of starting off fresh this new year. But like you said, with winter, colder weather, more time spent indoors comes a higher risk. So I think it's really going to have to, we're going to wait and see to see what happens this winter with any possible spike in COVID cases, especially in the school setting. And I think if school leaders and officials have learned anything over the last 2.5, 3 years, it's that they have to be incredibly quick to transition to new protocols or procedures. And I think they've shown that they're pretty adept at that by now.
What else will you be looking out for this school year?
Well, I think there's a lot of interesting issues to just keep on top of. One of them certainly is how the recent exam school admissions criteria changes will impact the makeup of student enrollment across BPS. Certainly the social emotional component of schools and how they're offering mental health services to youths and how they're trying to have them acclimate a little bit better to the school setting. In addition to how they're going to help their staff cope, because let's not forget, teachers as well are human beings, and they went through a lot too in the last 2-3 years. So we really want to bring the stories that are colorful and representative of what a school day actually is like for someone inside.
Suvan, thank you so much for taking us through what to expect for the school year and the first day of school. We got to take a quick break, but I want to ask you something else when we get back, so stick around. So here's my question for you, Suvan. If you could jump in a time machine and go back to your first day of your first year of high school, what book would you give young Suvan to read?
Wow. Oh, gosh. That's going to be a time machine that goes way back, because that was me in the high school years. Well, I think this is a book that, you know, I came in a little bit later in life too, but I think if I had picked it up as a high schooler, I would have appreciated it just as much. A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, which is just a kind of a coming of age novel. And I remember really sort of finding it just inviting and like an intimate read and probably relatable to a lot of young adolescents. And so I would choose that one.
Word. Understood. I think I would give myself the autobiography of Malcolm X. I was always familiar with Malcolm X, but I didn't read the actual autobiography until a little later. And I do feel like that's a great place to start in order to understand, you know, history and politics and things like that. I feel like that book is a great place. So I would have given myself that, like, here you go, buddy. You know, start here. But Suvan, thank you so much for talking with us and sharing with us. You know, I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Anytime. Thanks so much, Daryl.
That's WBUR's Assistant Managing Editor of Education, Suvan Lee. And that's all for today. This episode was produced by Franny Monahan. Our show is mixed by Emily Jankowski, Matt Reed, and Paul Vikas. Our editor is Ben Brock Johnson. And from the newsroom of WBUR, I'm your host, Daryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Do you want to feel more connected to your community? If so, you should check out Radio Boston, WBUR's local daily news magazine where the town hall meets the kitchen table. Radio Boston is a great way to stay connected to what's happening in our city and our region 5 days a week. Just search for Radio Boston on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe.